It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. And I want to talk about a force that is happening all around us.
And it's something that we learn about in school.
Friction.
Friction is the force that opposes motion. So very much a basic physical concept.
Two things rubbing together. But usually when we say there's friction, we're talking about a conflict, which can make friction sound like a bad thing.
Friction very much has a bad reputation. That's just the truth of the matter. And it comes from the definition itself, you know, resistance to motion.
This is Jennifer Vale.
Maybe I should start a campaign to try to raise awareness around the fact that friction's a good thing. It's the reason our cars don't slide off the road. It's the reason we don't fall on our face. We do need friction.
Jennifer is a friction expert.
I am a tribologist, someone who studies wear and friction of materials.
And if you've never heard of tribology, I hadn't.
The word tribology has the origin in the Greek word tribos, which is rubbing or to rub. And it is the science of interacting surfaces and relative motion. We look at wear, friction, lubrication.
And there are so many examples.
Your car tire rolling against the ground is one.
Or your new sneakers hitting a basketball court.
The squeaky basketball shoes is probably one of the best examples of the sound that friction can make.
Which is what wears out the soles of your shoes.
Yes.
And why do certain fabrics, like wool, irritate our skin? They cause more friction.
That was going to be my example.
But something like ice skating,
that's low friction.
And if it's too low, you'll lose your balance.
Friction is one of these things. It's always there.
And we deal with it all day long. But we hardly notice friction unless it's causing problems, like a painful blister or tension between friends. And there are situations that could use more resistance, where quick and seamless can lead to trouble. So today on the show, ideas about friction, how this force can be dialed up or down to improve our lives. Because tribologist Jennifer Vale says you want to get it just right, even on the smallest scale.
Brushing teeth, for example.
For sure. And I feel like I'm worried that I'm doing the friction wrong all the time, because if you do it right, you get rid of the germs, you get rid of the plaque. But if you do it wrong, you erode your gums. It seems like a very fine line with finding the right amount of friction.
Yeah, so this is another one of these benign activities we always do that is actually a pretty complicated friction problem. The toothpaste and toothbrush are working to remove or wear the plaque from your teeth.
Jennifer Vale continues from the TED stage.
You have hard materials, those be your teeth. Soft materials like your gums, the toothpaste, the toothbrush. There's lubrication, the form of saliva and water, the dynamics of the person doing the brushing, and more. I promise, if we put diamonds in your toothpaste, you're going to remove that plaque. Probably going to remove your teeth as well. So there's a fine balance to be had between wearing the plaque away and not damaging your teeth and gums. We all brush our teeth on a regular basis. How many of us brush our pets' teeth? Animals as adults commonly get periodontal disease, so we really should be brushing their teeth. So what pet food suppliers are trying to do is incorporate plaque removal in things like treats. If you have a dog, you may have observed that you give your dog a treat and it magically seems to disappear after just one bite. So the added challenge here is, how do you remove plaque when you have one bite? I developed a benchtop test to study this problem, and to do so, I had to mimic the oral system of dogs. And I used friction and wear measurements to study the effectiveness of that treat on removing plaque.
All right, so how exactly do you do this, Jennifer?
What we do is get a material that mimics a tooth, and then we'd also have the dog bone itself, so we could see maybe different recipes, even different shapes or roughness of that treat, how that impacts this. We would have a mimic plaque on the tooth, and you load these two samples together, and you rub them back and forth at a speed similar to what you do with a chew. So we use something called a tribometer, and the tribometer itself will measure the force of friction. So we can see for our conditions what that force is that's resisting the motion. And what you can also do is measure wear. and see the plaque removal.
Can you just like describe for me what your lab looks like? Because right now I have kind of like a Willy Wonka-esque vision in my mind of like, you know, lab tables with things that are just rubbing against each other and sort of like a kooky kind of situation. But what is the lab like?
The lab is a bunch of pieces of equipment rubbing things together. That is exactly what a tribology lab
All
is.
Right.
And each tribology lab will be a little bit different depending what they're studying. So if we're talking about a dog biscuit, we want to start with your hypothesis and designing your system. We think this is going to be better at removing plaque. You do the benchtop test that either confirms it or sends you back to the design table. And when you have something that looks promising, then you would go ahead and give that to the dog and monitor the plaque over time in their mouth and see, did it do what you thought it was going to do?
Huh, there are so many applications. All right, tell me another project that you've worked on.
My PhD work was looking more at syringes, which is very topical nowadays. But
yeah, vaccines.
Right, exactly, with vaccines. And a lot of times when I tell people that I was looking at syringes, they automatically assume I mean the needle in the arm, which there will be friction there. That is a problem to look at. That wasn't what I looked at. I was actually studying the stopper in a syringe.
Oh.
And the stopper is one of these things where you really don't pay attention to it, but you would if it wasn't doing its job. If friction was working against you so much that that needle is having to be pushed multiple times and harder because the stopper is getting stuck, you would definitely know.
Oh, no. So, okay, so you want there to be very little friction because you want the vaccine to be delivered into a person's arm very quickly.
And smoothly. But the other trick here is we have some syringes that we need it to be smooth and quick. And then there are some drip systems that are actually really large syringes where there is a stopper and it rotates really slowly. So these stoppers cover the full spectrum of different conditions. And it's critically important that they seal the vaccine or whatever they're administering to keep it sterile, to keep it from getting contaminated, which causes the problem with friction. And so how do you execute that syringe down the barrel so that it moves smoothly? And when you think about it, it's such a well-designed system because you have not had to think about it before.
But what's the big deal with tribology? Let me give you one more example. No matter where you are right now, you got to this location somehow. Maybe you walked or rode your bike, but for most people in this room, you probably came in a car. Just think about all the tribological systems in a car. You have your personal interactions with the car's interactions with the road, and then everything under the hood and in the drivetrain. Did you know that about one-third of the fuel that you put into your internal combustion engine vehicle will be spent overcoming friction? One-third. Tribology research has helped us reduce friction and therefore increase fuel efficiency and reduce emissions. Holmberg and Erdemer have actually done some great studies showing the impact tribology research can have on reducing our energy consumption. And they found that looking over the span of 20 years, we had the opportunity to reduce the energy consumption of passenger vehicles up to 60%. We think about all the cars in the world, it's a lot of energy we can save. It's part of the nearly 9% of our current global energy consumption that the authors identified tribology can help us save. This is through new materials, new lubricants, novel component design, doing things like making wind turbines more efficient and reliable. This happened just by putting 31 people in a room who viewed the world through a tribology lens.
Energy losses due to wear and friction can be reduced by up to about 40%.
Wow.
Which would translate to over 8% of global energy consumption. So there's a big opportunity here, and it all comes from the fact that friction is a non-conservative force. It's dissipating energy. If we can minimize it in these contacts where we don't want it there, then we can help conserve energy. And that also translates to emissions. So tribology turns out to be a nice little tool set that we have in our pockets for climate change battles.
It's funny because after talking to all these folks, I feel like, you know, when you're pregnant and you look and you're like, oh my God, everyone's pregnant because you like,
right.
You see it, you know, I feel like that way with friction. Like I can't do anything now without thinking about it.
That is exactly what friction and tribology is. And I always say it's a blessing and a curse. And if I have to see it everywhere, everyone else has to see it everywhere. It's to the point if something squeaks, I will cringe a little bit. Or if I hear, you know, someone riding a bicycle and I'm just like, oh, you need to use a different lubricant on that chain. But it is everywhere. If I have to see it everywhere, you have to see it everywhere. But when that happens, when people start seeing it everywhere, that's when the innovation starts to come. That's when we start having, you know, that energy consumption going down because people are thinking about it in this way. So it's just a very sneaky thing that it has a bad reputation, but I think we also need to appreciate it. I think we need to reframe it a little bit. Reducing energy through friction is a great thing, but we also need friction. I want my car's brakes to work. I want my shoes to have good traction. So just recognizing it's there and thinking about how we coexist with it and use it to our advantage, whether it's getting more of it or reducing it.
Well, Jennifer, I hope that I provided the right amount of friction in our conversation, that I smoothed the way to give answers, but pushed back just enough to make sure that you clarified the work that you do. Thank you.
Thank you. I hope I didn't wear you out with this conversation or rub you the wrong way.
Beautiful. Yeah,
the puns so don't good. Stop in tribology.
They don't stop, do they? My God.
It's a slippery slope.
That's tribologist Jennifer Vail. You can watch her full talk at TED.com. So we just learned how friction affects us in the physical world. But what about the virtual? Coming up, a conversation about adding a lot more friction to our online experience.
We Americans have come to expect that things are going to be easy and free and convenient, and that we don't want friction in our lives. We want to be able to order dinner and have it at our door as quickly as possible. It's what we've come to expect. But are we sure that's the best idea when it also comes to political rhetoric, to how we debate incredibly important topics that matter for our entire planet?
When we come back, Facebook whistleblower Yael Eisenstadt tells her story. On the show today, friction. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR.